community.
It's worth revisiting. We're a year into our public worship here at Grace, and it's worth considering again what Grace Community is all about. But in order to do that, we need to unpack what Grace Community is. What is grace? What is community? Without knowing each of those, we won't know what the sum total is in terms of being Grace Community. Now, sometimes we think we know well what grace is. But do we? And even if we know what it is cognitively, do we do a great job of communicating it to other people? One of my favorite authors is Philip Yancey. He's written many books, a couple of great ones, The Jesus I Never Knew, and another book, What's So Amazing About Grace? And in both books, he included the story of a man who worked among the down and out in Chicago. A woman came to him. She was in terrible shape. She couldn't earn a living. And because of that, she prostituted herself and even one of her children. She was truly down and out, had nowhere else to turn. He gave her as much counsel as he could, tried to care for her, and finally it just occurred to him to say, "Have you ever considered going to the church?" And she said, "The church? Why would I go to the church? I feel horrible about myself now. Why would I go to a place that's going to make me feel worse?" That story stuck with Philip Yancey. And that's unfortunately not an uncommon experience. People walk into the church and they don't feel welcome. They don't feel received. They don't feel loved. And so even when we think we know what grace is, we don't often practice it very well. Receiving those that are hurt, those who are broken, those who are at wits' end. What a great thing that we might be a place where that woman could come in and find love and help to get beyond the place where she is in life. In order to do that, we would have to know what grace is. And so what is grace? I mean, we know it in English, don't we? It's a part of many words that we use, graciousness and gratefulness, gratuity. We use those words all the time. In Greek, the word is charis or charitas. And we associate that with words like charisma or charismatic. Often we say that someone who's charismatic is a gifted person, for grace literally means gift, something that comes from outside. And when we think about it biblically, it's not an insignificant word, is it? In two short passages that we've just read, in John we heard it four times, and Paul's letter to the Ephesians we heard it three times. Grace is a significant word. It has everything to do with understanding what God is doing in Jesus Christ. It has everything to do with understanding what's going on in the New Testament. Grace. For by grace you've been saved. He came and dwelt among us full of grace and truth. Grace and truth. When I think of trying to unpack what grace is, I think of my friends Jim and Sharon Murphy. For years, they tried to have a child. When they couldn't, Sharon became Nana to my oldest, Mary Elizabeth, who's about to turn 22. Sharon loves kids. And she wanted to be around them, and her heart was broken. She grieved for many years because she couldn't have a child. They went to doctors for help. They began the process of adoption. And then lo and behold, one day, Sharon became pregnant. She had a beautiful daughter. Her name is Carissa from Charis. She's a grace. She's a gift from God. They fully saw that. It's not as if they weren't invested in it and they didn't labor to have a child, but in the end, they believed that Carissa came from God and God alone, that it was beyond their power to bring her into the world, that He just did that as a kindness and goodness to them and to Carissa. It was unanticipated, unexpected, God acting in such a bold way to give them a child. Thus, they called her Carissa. But they did labor a little. They had to work. So if we're going to unpack the word grace, we've got to think a little bit more about it. Maybe it's like winning the lottery. What are the odds of winning the lottery? There are millions, hundreds of millions to one. And yet somebody wins. And in this case, we have the winning ticket. And it leads to this full and abundant life that God wants us to have. That gets us a little bit further in understanding what grace is about, but maybe it's more like this, that somebody else bought the ticket. They walked out and quietly slipped it into our pocket. We found it later and it was the winning ticket. Unanticipated, unexpected, we didn't do anything to earn it. And yet we've got the winning number. Let's take it a little bit deeper because it's actually different than that, isn't it? I mean, what grace is all about, let's imagine that we're going to walk into the place where you buy lottery tickets and we have an unpleasant encounter with someone and we curse him, reject him, and leave. What does he do? He goes in and buys the lottery ticket. It's the winning ticket. And he comes out and he sticks it in our pocket. We find it later. And we've won. This person that we've grieved, this person that we've rejected, continued to pursue us and love us and give us the winning number. That's what we're getting in Jesus Christ. That's what grace is all about. We don't do anything to earn it. We never saw it coming. It's just this powerful way of God coming into the world and entering into our muck and all the things that we've done wrong and overlooking all of that in order to give us life, a rich, full, and abundant life in Jesus. That's what grace is about. And think about it. It begins with God. He initiates. He's pursuing us. We'll talk about it in a minute, but some of us labor so hard and so long trying to work our way back to God when He's continually moving towards us. That's what grace is. Francis Thompson in the 19th century talked about Him being the hound of heaven and pursuing the fleeing soul in an unperturbed pace, relentlessly, because of the divine grace of our Maker. The hound of heaven is coming after us. We didn't initiate this. We didn't start this. We can't make it happen. He's coming to us. Our challenge is not to flee. It's not to get back to Him. It's not to flee this grace that's moving towards us. That's what great grace is. It's coming towards us. And it has meaning for our lives. It's so applicable to how we live. For the believers among us, think about what grace does. It reminds us that His yoke is easy and His burden is light. Because so often we exhaust ourselves, laboring to get back to Him, laboring to please Him, thinking that we have to do something in order to get Him to delight in us. And grace says, no, I'm moving towards you, John. One of my greatest challenges in the last few years, really, and fully, completely appreciating this grace of God. I learned somewhere along the way that I had to earn God's favor. And I labored to do it. And at times I had the rewards of my labors that would surely endear me to God. But what about on the days when I didn't? I didn't know grace. I didn't know love. I felt isolated and alone, a failure, trying to find the strength to get up and win the favor of God again when it was already there. God pursuing us means grace is only one turn away. Me turning back towards this God who's pursuing me and has been pursuing me, who knows me by name from the beginning of time. Believers, don't exhaust yourself pursuing God. Remember that He's there. If you'll only turn around, He's there with open arms to receive you back. That's what grace is. What about those who are unchurched, who can't find their way into the church? For fear, stay out of the church. I'm reminded of this great cartoon that I saw years ago. And you have to be a bit of a redneck like me to appreciate it, probably. But it's a picture of a man and woman in a truck, a pickup truck. And in those days, every pickup truck had a bench seat. And often you would see a wife sitting right beside her husband who was driving the truck. And that's where you found this couple in the first frame. In the second frame, there was a little bit of space between them. She had moved towards the middle. In the third frame, a little bit further. In the fourth frame, all the way to the other side. And in the next frame, there are bubbles coming out of their mouths, and she says to her husband, "We're not as close as we used to be." And he said, "I haven't moved." We often flee God, but he's right where he said he would be. He hasn't moved. He hasn't walked away from us. He hasn't abandoned us. If we're feeling like we can't enter into the life of the church, if we feel like we can't enter into the life of Jesus, it's as close as turning around, just sliding back across that bench seat. God's waiting with open arms to receive us. What about those of us who don't know if we believe? We're again reminded of God moving towards us. We're talking about grace. Can we imagine the shepherd who leaves the 99 of us who are gathered in this building in order to go out and find that one sheep that's lost? Now, can you put yourself in the place of being that one sheep? He's willing to walk away from all this in here in order to go out there and find you. Now, that's grace. God moving towards us. God pursuing us relentlessly in an unperturbed space, like a hound after the hare. But what he wants to give us is delight and grace and goodness and the abundant life. God is moving towards us. For all of us, grace is God moving towards us, not us moving towards him. So whether we're believers who sometimes find ourselves exhausted, whether we're unchurched or unbelievers, God is still coming after each and every one of us. All in the same way and all with the same passion. The unbeliever can't displease God any more than the believer. The unbeliever can't please God any more than the believer. He's coming after all of us because he made us. And he looked upon everything he made and he said, "It is good." And even after we rejected him, he stuck the ticket back in our pocket and he said, "You're still good. I made you. I want you. Come home. Just turn around. I'm there for you." That helps us understand what grace is. That helps us understand what kind of people we want to be. If God has really infused our lives with grace, then we will be grace-filled people to those who are on the outside. They'll come into our midst and they'll find a home. They'll find people pursuing them in spite of where they've been, how far they've fled, and just extending to them love and mercy and grace. Does that mean that we overlook sin? Absolutely not. God doesn't. But it means that we're all in the same boat and he's still coming after us. And so we're willing to go after people who are just like us in order that they might be redeemed and know this abundant life that we have. This is grace. God coming after us. God coming after us. So what is community? If we're grace community and we have a better understanding of what grace is, what does community look like? The word in Greek, of course, is koinonia. A famous president a few years ago, some of us will remember him, started a place called Koinonia Farms. It's about fellowship. It's about participating in the life of each other. And at the deepest way. How many times have we been into a church where we somewhat knew the people that were around us but didn't know anything about what was going on in their lives? We might not know if they just lost their job or just had a miscarriage. We might not know if they just had a beautiful baby or won the lottery. We just don't know because we're not interacting in a way in which we can know. And what God is calling to us to as grace-filled people who have been infused by grace because of our belief in Jesus Christ and what God's doing for us in Him, that we live in community with one another and know each other by name and know where our heart breaks and know where our heart soars. In the words of that famous poet, John Donne, no man is an island unto himself. We're all a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Never sin to know for whom the bell tolls, because it tolls for thee. What did John Donne mean by that? He meant that anytime anyone dies, the community is lesser for it. We've lost a part of who we are. Somebody who makes a considerable, considerate, grand contribution to who we are as a people gathered. And if someone's missing, if someone dies, the community is less for it. Never send a note for whom the bell tolls. Because today it may be for me, but in the process, something that you've loved and participated in has died just a little. That's what Jesus means to inspire in us, that kind of community where we recognize when someone's not there, when we recognize a heart that's broken, when we recognize a heart that's soaring. That's what it means to live in the community that Jesus is starting. That has to inform who we want to be as a people. It's so easy to become silos, if you will, all in the same place, but no interaction because of the walls that we've built around us. I bet some of our neighbors here from Linwood Park can attest to that. Often we choose to live in our homes and not interact with the people that even live next door. God's calling us out of our silos and into intimate and deep lives with each other, demonstrating the kind of care and unconditional love that He's given to us. That's community. That's grace community. That's where He's calling us. We are grace community. Amen.